Blog Talk Radio.
Yay! Hello! Hello, everybody! Woo! Welcome to another reality show. I am your host, Golden Hawk. It is Thursday night. Actually, I'm realizing I have some listeners in Australia, so it's actually, and it's Friday morning. Whether it's night or morning or afternoon, welcome to the show. I'm really, really excited about tonight's show, as it's a very auspicious conversation with delightful people. I wanted to try and book the amazing Benjamin Krem for the show. Unfortunately, he was not able to do the show. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to play last year's interview that I had with Mr. Krem right now, and the wonderful Gary Willing, who came on the show with me last year, is on the air with me now live, so we're going to update everybody on, there is a lot to be updated on too, so I definitely recommend the listeners stick around after Benjamin speaks, because we're going to update the information on what's happening with At Share International, the world teacher Maitreya, many, many things. I mean, this is not just, you know, as the world goes into this darkness, believe me, the light is taking a stand as well. So this is really a very optimistic show, and I welcome anybody who's feeling hopeless to tune in, stick around, and really feel the vibe, because there's an amazing presence in Benjamin's interview, whether it's live or not. He's been speaking his message for 30 years. So, oh, and this is all because Benjamin is in the New York area, which I will give information. All his lectures are free. They're amazing. So first let's get into the interview, and then I'm going to bring Gary on, and we're going to share all the information of how, if you're in the Eastern Seaboard, if you'd like to see Benjamin, he's actually not in London. He's in New York and in the U.S. right now. So I'm going to start the interview, and it's about an hour, so I will be back live in about an hour. All right, talk to you then.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another reality show. I'm your host, Golden Hawk, and I am so exquisitely excited about tonight's show. I have an exquisite international speaker. His name is Benjamin Krem. He has been speaking, he's been speaking for many years on the exquisite subject of Maitreya, the world teacher. Now, this subject has a lot of points. If my listeners remember, I've had a few shows on where I've had some people that are very devoted to Maitreya and the cause come on the show. But Benjamin Krem has been working directly with some ascended masters, or a master anyways, sharing this wisdom since 1975. Well, let's bring him on. Welcome to the show, Mr. Krem.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Thank you so much. So I tend to get a little like, wow, there's so much information. So I think let's start off the information of Maitreya's and how you connected with Maitreya when this first began for you.
Well, I was first contacted by one of the masters straight out of the blue. I mean, I wasn't expecting it. I knew about the masters. I had read about them, and I believed in their existence, but I wasn't expecting any contact. But one day, a man came to me, and he said, "The masters are trying to contact you." I said, "No, they're not." He said, "Yes, they are, and I have been sent to tell you they are." I said, "Well, I don't hear a thing. It is a telepathic contact that they usually make." He said, "No, you don't get them because you're not open." And I said, "What do you mean not open? I mean, I believe in them." He said, "Yes, but you're just not open to it. But don't worry, it'll come, it'll settle down." And probably because I had been told about it, I was more open, whatever that meant. And about 6 weeks after that event, a message came to me as loud as day, clearly, and it was about 11 at night, and it said to go to a certain place. I don't know if you know London, but it was Blackfriars Bridge in London.
I've never been to London. I wish I have, but I have not been there.
Well, I knew Blackfriars Bridge, and I went there. It gave me a time. It was about 3 weeks ahead, and I went there 9:30, and I walked over the bridge, and there was nobody there. It's a kind of office type area.
Okay.
In the daytime, so at night it's very quiet.
Right.
But there was a car, an automobile, at the end of the bridge, and I sidled up to it and looked in, and there were some people in it I didn't know, but one of them was the man who had come and told me I was receiving messages from the masters.
He was in the car.
Thing started from there.
Well,
and my work in the beginning for several years was with the Space Brothers. It wasn't to do with preparing the way for Maitreya, which I've been doing since 1975. But this event I'm talking about started in January 1959. So it's a long time ahead.
Yeah.
And the contact was with his masters. And then in about March 79, he said, suddenly in the middle of giving me a lot of information, he said, now, turn off. He got me to get a tape recorder. And he began to give me long dissertations, which I simply mouthed, repeated as I heard them inside and recorded them. And then he said, well, switch off the machine and kneel down. Now he said, now, Maitreya, our master, has something important to tell you. And then I had the most extraordinary experience of my life. It was extraordinary. He what it's called, overshadowed me. His energy poured through me. I completely changed in consciousness. I was filled with the love of all the world. My heart sort of melted, and I saw no difference between myself and anything else in the world.
Wow.
And if I looked to the right, I was a great sphere of light, and if I looked to the right, I could see all the events of the past, which were still taking place. And I thought I could recognize quite a lot of them from history. And if I looked to the left, I could see the events of the future, which had not yet taken place. And I could see myself talking to people, talking to crowds. I could see Maitreya talking to vast numbers and people running about the streets, crying with joy at the experience of what it was they had experienced. And then the voice of Maitreya came out loud and clear. And he said, very simply, he said, I myself am coming far sooner than anyone thinks possible. It will be in about 20 years. In the event, it was 18 years. And he said, and you will have a role to play in my coming if you accept it. Now, I was filled with this extraordinary energy of love. There was only one thing I could do, you know. Inwardly, I thought, well, I don't know what you're asking me to do, but I'm your man. You know?
It's hard to say no when you're filled with love.
Absolutely. And so I said, I'm your man, whatever it takes. And that was all. And then I came back to everyday normality. And the master said, my master said again, well, sit down, turn on the machine again. And I did that. He said, well, you've heard today something which has changed your whole view of things, which indeed it had. He said, the time is coming when you will be expected to act upon it and affirm his coming. He said that on another, a few days later, in another talking about faith, and he said, for lack of that one ingredient. And he talked about faith in a way that people don't know. It's a long dissertation, and it isn't faith as we know it in terms of belief. Not that faith in, you know, Christians have faith in the Christ.
Right.
Jews have faith in the Messiah. Hindus have faith in Krishna. Not that kind of faith. But faith in your own experience.
Oh, wow.
What you have experienced, you know to be true.
That's...
And nobody can take it from you.
Absolutely.
He said, have faith and affirm his coming. He said, for lack of that one ingredient of faith, many promising disciples have failed. Have faith and affirm his coming. And then he said, now put away these tapes. I had dozens of tapes. I said, put them away. Don't open them again. And I put them away for 17 years and never played them again. And until he said, right, you can play them, but to whomever you like. And then, of course, I was engaged in work which, as I said, was with the Space Brothers, not to do with the reappearance of the Christ at all, until 1974, when the Master had me form a group, and the first transmission meditation group was formed as the central force of the group from which we could all draw energy. And he gave me a number of names to invite to join this group, and we did that group. It was in March 1974, the first transmission meditation group was formed. And as I have worked traveling around the world and writing and so on, I have at the same time sought to spread transmission meditation. And there are now hundreds of such groups around the world, in most countries of the world. So it's a double thing. The transmission meditation is working with hierarchy in a way otherwise not possible today, and at the same time doing a great work of service, and at the same time strengthening the energy, the spirituality of the groups, and making them better servers, and making known about the reappearance of the world. So it's two in one.
Yeah, well, and I, because I'm a part of one of the TM groups, and I can speak from personal experience. There, I don't know that I've had a full-blown experience of love, but I know me and our group, and I've just joined the group. The group has been getting together for, I believe, at least 8 years. There is such a sense of, it's lovely. It's there's a sense of a family, even though it's not about blood. It's just about, you know, the family that wants to see love in the world and sharing and caring. It's a wonderful experience. I would recommend it to all the listeners for the, you know, the experience of what you take home with you, that you just feel you're part of something tremendously, you know, divine.
It is precisely that. It is a divine work. Working with the Masters is a great privilege and a wonderful experience. And transmission meditation involves the transmission through oneself, or through the group, as a group. It's a group meditation where the energy of the Masters, they have out tremendous energy. But the difficulty is that the energy is cosmic and solar and extraplanetary, and is always at such a high vibrational level that if sent at the level that the Masters receive it into the world, it's too high for humanity.
Right.
And it would just bounce off them and be wasted.
Right.
So transmission meditation groups have been formed through whom the energy is sent in the first place. So if you see the battery as hierarchy, the Masters sending the energy, transmission meditation groups become like a sub-group through whom the energy is sent. They're sent through the chakras, the four centers in the spine, of the various members of the group, and from there directed by hierarchy into the world. And there's a way of holding the attention that's given. It's a very, very simple form of meditation.
Absolutely.
Incredibly effective, because it's done by the masters, who are master scientists. So there's everyone is joined to everybody else energetically. And this creates triangles. And these triangles potentize all the energy so many times. So the greater the number of the people, the greater number of triangles. The greater number of triangles, the more potent is the group. And so they can distribute tremendous potency of energy for the first time through humanity.
Well, and this is the energy that's, I believe, supporting the conscious shifts that are going on the planet now.
Yes, humanity is emerging out of thousands of years of sleep.
Yes, we are.
We've been sound asleep without realizing who we are and what we are and what our potential is. We have been snoring away there, letting it all happen outside ourselves. But the world is waking up. The world, we're going through a tremendous phase in three senses. One is that we are moving out of one age into another age. We are now in the age of Aquarius, having spent the last 2,150 years under the influence of the energies of Pisces. We're now coming under the influence of the energies of Aquarius, which started in 1675 and are now mounting in potency at a tremendous rate, so that the energies of Pisces and the energies of Aquarius are more or less equal today. So the world is divided in the middle. There are those, half the population or a little more than half, who are holding on to the Piscean experience, the past, and everything that they do is of the past. The past has done, they have done well from the past, and they love the past. It's not that they're evil, it's simply that they love and regret the passing of the past. Whereas the others, and the most younger people, not that I'm young, but they are young people, and they are responding more to the energies of Aquarius. But there are no forms. No political, economic, religious, scientific, educational forms, structures in the world through which the Aquarian energies can be demonstrated, can work. All the structures we have are the result of the Piscean experience, and they are crystallized. They no longer work.
Right.
Humanity has moved on, but the governments and the people generally running affairs, the money men, as the masters call, the men of money who have let humanity down with a huge personal shock just recently by what they call a downturn.
Yes, lightly, huh?
Absolutely downturn.
I call it a sinkhole.
Yeah, it is the end of the old order. It is
right.
Really the end of the way of working, of relating, of using the potential of the earth and of humanity for the next 2,500 years of Aquarius. So the governments try their best to handle affairs, but they're working with techniques which were fine maybe for the last 2,000 years, but no longer work.
Right.
To prove that no longer work, we have millions of people, literally millions of people starving to death.
Yeah.
We have 1.2 or 3 billion people living with income of less than a dollar a day.
Yeah.
So it's obvious that it doesn't work. The ways of the past which are the ways of the present moment, do not work for humanity. And Maitreya comes at this time of greatest need to prevent us from destroying ourselves. We have the potential to destroy all life on earth. And it comes to make sure that that does not happen by inspiring humanity to take war out of the equation altogether, to leave war behind forever, and to create through sharing and through creating justice and freedom for all people, wherever they are, a new and better world. That is his mission, to show humanity how to live together in peace, in harmony, and to fulfill the potential which humanity has hardly begun to show. There have been, you know, the Leonardo da Vinci's and the Einsteins and the Mozart and the Beethovens and so on, but isolated beings. The coming time will be the time in which all of humanity contributes to the creation of a brilliant new civilization such as this world has never seen.
Oh, it's exquisite. Now, and Maitreya has stated that even though it looks bad, that humanity does make the choice to make the shift into the Aquarian age in this new level of consciousness.
Well, we have a choice. We can go on in the way we're doing,
okay,
and destroy ourselves. A war today could become a major war. And if it was a major war, it would be a nuclear war.
Right.
And 28, not 9 officially, but 28 unofficially, have nuclear weapons. And 28 nations with the nuclear weapons. In fact, just a matter.
Hello? Benjamin? Mr. Cram, I mean? Hello? Okay. He is still with us on the switchboard. I'm not sure what happened. So everybody stay tuned. I am going to bring in our second guest until Benjamin comes back. Gary Willing, are you with us? Hello?
Hello.
Gary?
Yes, I am.
I don't know what happened to Benjamin. So he might come back. It's 20 after. He was going to stay with us for a half an hour. If he calls back, that would be, of course, wonderful. If not, do you mind kind of helping a girl out who's in a bit of a bind?
I'll do my best. I was really enjoying what he was saying.
I was as well. He is an exquisite presence, that beautiful man is. So he was saying about, you know, well, before that, let me introduce you. Gary Willing is my second guest tonight, who is also very much a supporter of the Maitreya, the emergence of Maitreya from personal experiences, which is why I thought it was going to be so fabulous to have him come on. That Benjamin Krem seems to be somewhat of an icon, so to speak, of this work, but this work is really about the people, what do they call it, the grassroots movement of the people that support this. And as Mr. Krem was saying in the beginning, that really comes from initially having a personal experience.
And having the faith to say it, to tell other people about it, because people think you're crazy from time to time, most of the time, actually.
Right. Well, because it seems so amazing that they don't believe that something this wonderful could be, but if you ask them if they believe are we being attacked from the galactics, they seem much easier to believe their fear than they do to believe something like an elder brother who was here to assist us.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy, you know. I mean, it's like talking about health care. In the South especially, a lot of people don't like the idea of universal health care because it's too expensive, it's too this, but they have no problem funding a war in the unlikely event that we would be attacked by a terrorist, but yet they're not concerned about you know, protecting the citizens through healthcare, which to me, you have a greater chance of having a disease and not being able to pay for it in the healthcare system that we have, you know? So it's just, it shows the deception that we all have for our, you know, within ourselves of our own beliefs and things like that, that are in contrary to what's really going on, you know, I think. But that's just my humble opinion, but, you know.
No, I happen to support your humble opinion because there really is this, like, hypnosis over people. Mm. That they, and, you know, it's, because I like when Mr. Krem was saying about waking up. It is, you know, like what we believe what and what is and even slash what could be, you know, we are living very much in the dark part of life when light is all around us.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, please.
No, I said, and within us too, you know, like you were saying.
Very much, yes.
The listeners weren't listening to our phone conversation when we were getting introduced, you know, yesterday or 2 days ago.
Right.
You're talking about the light and the love within all of us and stuff like that. You know, I mean, it's really true. You know, I mean.
Yeah, it's a significant aspect because, again, I guess it kind of comes back to faith. I think if people haven't experienced something of a loving experience, their whole perception is that life is outside of them. Their inside is just, you know, fluids, you know, cellular, and, you know, they don't recognize that the spirit of everything is within self.
So may I turn the tables on you for just 1 second? I'm curious to know myself. What draws you to the story? What has the ring of truth for you about Maitreya?
Wow. Hey, thanks, Gary.
Well, I'm curious.
Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, well, the ring of truth for me is I've had several experiences. I don't know if they're Maitreya-based or not. I believe they're Saint Germain. Saint Germain is the master that works with me. He's appeared to me physically. I've been on a spaceship. When you start what I call walking between the worlds, and, you know, again, it's not a matter of faith, it's a matter of there's a knowingness. I have had personal experiences of walking between the worlds. When I came upon the Maitreya information, which was actually through the gentleman who wrote Exquisite Beings or Magnificent Beings, Magnificent Times.
Yeah, Wayne Peterson.
Wayne Peterson. I saw him on one of the YouTubes, and what captured me, literally, heart, mind, soul, body, was he was a dignitary. He was a ambassador. Speaking of, you know, subjects and topics like masters and spirituality and chakras, you know, and I went, and then when I found Benjamin Krem's books, which, by the way, they're, I have the first three Maitreya missions on the episode page that you can order them straight from Amazon if you go on the episode page. When I read them, he paints this most exquisite picture of life, and that it this is not, you know, sci-fi. This is how life can be right now if each and every one of us just understands our part in life as being something that is compassionate and loving instead of selfish and fearful.
Mm-hmm.
So when I read this, I was like, well, where do I sign up? I mean, the first thing I did was found a TM group, and then the next thing I was like, well, I'm a media.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, and I started finding people and said, come on the show and speak of this, because, I mean, these are the greatest times I believe humanity has ever been exposed to and experiencing, and to be a part of it from the point of view that it's not the it is a death of sorts, but it is simultaneously a birth. You know, the death of the old, but the birth of the new. I'm an eternal optimist. I said, where do I sign? Because of my
you
own person.
You don't have to sign anything, obviously, to do transmission, but if you're kidding.
Well, yeah, no, metaphorically. How can I put my 2 cents in? I was, you know, super stoked that Benjamin was coming on the show tonight. Oh, Benjamin is back. Let me. I'm going to put you on hold and grab him. Actually, I'm not even going to put you on hold because I don't know what your number is, but I want to get Ben on. Mr. Krem?
You can speak now.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
We lost you.
Yes, I didn't know what to do, so I brought Gary on, but I would love for you to, you know, share a few more moments, if that's fine with you.
Yes, it's fine.
Okay.
I don't know where we broke off, but I just went on talking, not knowing.
Oh, okay.
Broken up.
Well, I can tell you, it was because it was an exquisite thread that you were speaking on. It was about the fact that living life without war, not having war as an actual reality.
We have to put war in the past, not another war of any kind, large or small. It could be the ending of humanity.
Hmm.
If it was a small war, it could become a larger war.
Right.
A larger war would be a nuclear war. A major war would be nuclear and would destroy all life on Earth, human and subhuman alike.
Yeah.
So that is the realization that humanity has to take into itself. No further wars anywhere. Now, there are people in many countries plotting further wars, even as I speak. But Maitreya is here to turn humanity away from war. And he will be very clear about it. He is very, very soon coming on to begin his outer mission. He is not working openly in the world. He's working very much in the world, has been for years, but is not working openly. And when he appears quite soon, he will appear on major television in America and then in Japan and later all over the world. And he will talk very simply. He will say the same kind of things as I say.
Mm. Right.
About war and the necessity for peace, about the dangers of war, about realizing that we are one, brothers and sisters of one humanity,
yeah.
Whatever the color, whatever the background, we are one with the same needs. Therefore, the resources of the world must be shared like a family. We are a family without realizing it. And all families share the resources that come into the world, into the house. This world has no shortage of food, and yet millions are starving to death. And millions more are living in such penury and privation, that little better than animals. And this must stop. We must see humanity as what he knows we are, which is potential gods. But we can only become these potential gods when we realize our kinship and the fact that we are divine and begin to express that divinity. The masters are divine, and they are perfected because they have totally perfected themselves and become identical with their souls. We are all souls in incarnation, but the soul has great problems in expressing itself through ordinary humanity, filled with its fears and its injustices and its greed and its selfishness and so on. Maitreya is here to galvanize, one, the sense of the divinity in humanity. And he says the first step into sharing is the first step into your divinity. And the thing which he says, this millions dying of starvation in the midst of plenty, there is no shortage of food and yet millions are dying. He said, this is a crime, a blasphemy.
Yeah.
He says, how can you support this degradation? He said, nothing so moves me to grief as this shame. The crime of separation must be driven from this earth. I affirm that as my purpose. So, you know, in a word, that the aim, plan of Maitreya is to galvanize the best in humanity, to bring all that is good, all that is divine, and to take away the fear and the insecurity, the distrust that exists between the nations and between the people in each nation and so on, and to show that we are brothers and we have to cooperate. We are filled with hatred because we are filled with competition.
Mm.
We live in a world of competition and greed. That is because we have sunk into this deep materialism. And here comes to awaken again the true divinity of humanity and to set us on the right course to make freedom and real social justice in every country of the world and thus make peace. And he says there will never be peace until there is justice, and there will never be justice until there is sharing. So the first step is the acceptance of the principle of sharing.
Wow, that was beautiful, Mr. Crown.
Very simple. It says,
yes.
And you see, I can say these things. You can say yes or no, you know, you like it or you don't like it. Anybody can. But when Maitreya says them, with it goes his energy.
Right.
His energy as the embodiment of love. And he talks from heart to heart. So he says, relatively very little, many few words, but they penetrate the heart. And the result is you feel in yourself that that's the truth.
Yes.
You know, there's no gainsaying it. You don't argue the point. Say, well, what about?
Right.
You just know that is the truth. Now, when Maitreya is speaking on television, his energy will flow out to those thousands or millions of listeners at the same time, and they will experience that energy so that he can inspire and galvanize millions and millions of people in a way that no one else can.
Now, that's called the day of emergence, is that correct?
The day of not of emergence, well, there is a day of emergence.
But that's not what you're referencing.
On television, no. No, the day of emergence when he comes on television in America for the first time. That's the emergence into the open. But the big day which that will lead to is the day in which he declares, we call it the day of declaration.
Declaration, there it is.
In which
my fault.
He declares himself as Maitreya. Up until then, he will use another name so that people can respond to the message, and not because it's Maitreya, the Christ, the world teacher, the Maitreya Buddha, or whatever the groups are listening are waiting for.
Right.
Christians are waiting for the Christ. Hindus are awaiting Krishna. Buddhists are awaiting Maitreya Buddha. They've got his name right, but if they're Japanese, they expect him in 350 million years from now.
Oh, wow.
You know, there's no incentive to change.
Yeah, this is true.
It's a long time to wait.
Yes.
Maitreya is here. He's been living in London since July 1977. And it comes, you can take it in the nick of time to prevent the complete destruction of humanity and the lower kingdoms. But we are now at the end of an age and the beginning of another, and he comes as the avatar, the teacher for the Aquarian age to show us how to live together. It is the age of group consciousness. The Aquarian energies don't work through individuals, but everyone through the experience of Pisces have become individualistic.
Right.
And that is a great step forward for humanity. But to keep at that stage is to deny the inherent capacity to evolve. And so we would lose out. We have to evolve not by the loss of our individuality, but by placing our individuality, which is precious to us, at the service of the group. The
right.
group is humanity.
Right.
Yeah, our own group and a bigger group and a bigger group and humanity in general. So
right.
you'll find, as you're beginning to find, the growth of groups. This is in direct response to the energies of Aquarius.
Well, as well as the hierarchy in general, are they not infusing consciousness with this sense of unification?
Well, yes, but it comes through energy. Everything comes through energy. We live in an energetic universe. And the masters put ideas into the mind belt,
okay.
and sensitive minds respond to it and so on. But the energies make it possible.
Okay.
Energies of Aquarius make the formation of groups and, in the end, total group consciousness around the world and all that entails, so that we see ourselves as one and create as one. We instead of competition, we have cooperation. And when you cooperate, you can do miracles.
Yes.
Which are impossible by competition. The
yes.
age of competition has to die, and now is the time.
Yay!
Except in sport.
Except in sport?
Yes.
So we get to keep watching football and baseball?
England will still play Australia at cricket and hopefully
yes.
beat them.
You're sweet. do you have time to speak on another topic?
Well, what other topic is it?
I was going to speak about the star.
Oh, the star. Well, the star, there are four stars, in fact.
Oh.
North, south, east, and west. And, of course, they're not real stars. Nobody can make a star.
Right.
Except God. But Maitreya has had placed four stars around the world, but we will see only one, because north, south, east, west, depending where we live in the world, we will see in our segment of the heavens, we have the possibility to see one of these stars. And they are not stars at all. They are star-like luminaries, as my master has called them.
Okay.
And they change color, they move, they don't go on a trajectory, they move about, and they come and go, and they're seen sometimes, and then they're not seen at other times, and so on. And they behave very strangely, but look like stars, only much bigger and brighter than the average star. More like a planet. If you were to see Venus or Jupiter, it's more like that, only when you see Venus or Jupiter, they don't change color and they don't go, they only go on a trajectory,
right,
which is carrying them on round in their circuit of the solar system. But the star can change its shape. And we have photographs of the stars from all over the world of many different shapes, mainly round, but also sort of like diamond shape.
Okay.
And like solid diamonds, if you could imagine a solid diamond. So it's not a flat thing, you know.
Right, right.
And also red or green or yellow or brown or orange, you know, tremendous different color, and giving out fiery lights from all around it. And I know one colleague of mine in Atlanta, Georgia, who saw the star. He wasn't sure if it was the star. He says, but if you are the star, he thought in his mind, looking at it, he said, if you are the star, can you move? And the star moved a little bit,
yeah.
and then it was joined by another star, and then another, and then another, so that there were four stars lined up in front of his eyes.
Wow.
I mean, it's extraordinary. They're probably thousands of miles away, and in seconds they came and lined up. Now, they're not normally lined up. That was just given, but it's an extraordinary thing. The stars are spaceships. They're made, one is made in Mars, one in Venus, one in Jupiter, and the other in another planet, which I'm not given the name of.
Okay.
And there's no doubt at all that people will ask about the star, and Maitreya will answer. They are spacecraft from these other planets, and they're about the size of 5 football fields put together.
Wow.
Enormous.
Yeah, that is
enormous. Gigantic.
Yeah.
And they're charged. They're not there all the time because they have to be charged by the sun. So they get charged, and then they can show this brilliant light, and then they get charged again and so on. So they run out of juice, so to speak, and get charged again from the sun. And so that when they're charged, they then demonstrate as a star. And when they're not, they're getting recharged from the sun.
Gotcha.
And they'll be there, I'm told, until the day of declaration. And nobody knows when that will be. It depends on humanity's response to Maitreya. It's thought to be relatively quick. I don't know what in the Master's mind is quick.
Right.
But my idea is maybe, I don't know, a year and a half, maybe, or something like that, till the day of declaration. The day of declaration is the most wonderful experience that anyone on earth will have had. The humanity will receive from Maitreya the full demonstration of his divinity and of ours, because he is a man as we are, only he is infinitely more evolved than we are. But he began as an ordinary human being. There's nothing, no pain, no suffering, no failure that we go through, which Maitreya himself has not gone through in far distant past, and become, at the end, enabled to embody the Christ principle, the energy of love. And that potential rests in every single human being. Only we live in ways of competition and greed which denies even food for millions of people, and the ability to understand and to become what we essentially are, which are gods. We are gods in potential.
Yes.
And Maitreya will tell us so.
Yeah, those are my beliefs as well. It is divine to speak of someone who has been speaking of this almost as long as I've been alive, because I also fully know that. I'm just not fully experienced in it. But I have had several experiences in my lifetime to let me know that there are what I call walking between the worlds, many things that are existing that will be unveiled to us as we are, I guess, kind of holding more frequency or a higher frequency or a different frequency that lets us know that to hurt another human is, or to starve another human is only to starve a sense of self.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Maitreya says, see your brother as yourself.
Right.
And solve the problems of the world. There is no other course.
Yeah.
And on the day of declaration, people will realize this in a way that even listening to Maitreya they might not have done.
Right.
Because he will come into telepathic rapport with the whole of humanity at one time. So the television networks of the world would be linked together by satellite, which are in place for this event. And he will form this, it'll be a temporary thing, of course, but telepathy is an inborn quality in all humanity. It is simply not developed.
Right.
And developed or not, it's not used. It's only a haphazard thing, you know, between husband and wife or lovers or between parents and children. There is often very clear demonstration of telepathy, but it's not an everyday thing. But everyone is potentially telepathic. One
right.
day, speech will die out. We will talk only telepathically.
Right.
And no one can tell a lie telepathically.
Right. Right. No more secrets.
No more secrets. No
yeah.
more lies. And humanity will become different. And on the Day of Declaration, this will happen between Maitreya and all adults above the age of 14.
Wow.
And that's everybody in the world,
yeah.
if they want to hear it. And he will introduce himself, who he really is, where he comes from. He will introduce his group of masters and introduce some of them by name, like Jesus. The Master Jesus is one of the best-known masters.
Right.
Christians believe that they're waiting for Jesus Christ to return. They're waiting really for Maitreya to return, because Maitreya worked through Jesus for the last 3 years of Jesus' life, from the baptism to the crucifixion. So that when people heard Jesus speak, they were really hearing the words of Maitreya.
Right.
He overshadowed Jesus. But for the first time in history, the teacher, the world teacher, that is Maitreya, has come himself. Up till now, it has always been by overshadowing a disciple. Like the Buddha overshadowed the Prince Gotama, and he became Gotama Buddha.
Right.
Maitreya overshadowed Jesus, and Jesus became Jesus the Christ. But only for those 3 years. Christ's principle rests in Maitreya, and Jesus is one of his most close disciples. In fact, he and Maitreya seem to be inseparable. And he is a great master, involved, as all of the masters are, in saving humanity, in healing, in educating, saving from accidents and so on, appearing to people all over the world. They never seem to be still. They don't need to sleep. They don't need to eat. They work 24 hours a day, and moment to moment, they have no sense of time, and so they can work outside time. They can see what's going to happen ahead of time and interfere if the karma of the person allows that. But they are bound by our karma because they cannot infringe our free will. It's sacrosanct.
Right.
And so we have to be ready to accept what they have to give. We have to want it. We have to want to share the resources of the world. We have to want justice for all peoples in the world. We have to want peace like we have never wanted anything in the world before,
yes.
in order to have that peace. And we have to want to what it takes to do it, to share and to make justice. For a lot of people, that will be painful, who have never shared in their life and who have just got richer and richer and lived their lives outside the major focus of humanity, in a position of control or higher status or whatever they think they have. and power to make war, power to make the weapons of war. These are glamours of humanity, which you will find Maitreya will speak about and show that these are worthless to humanity and bring only pain and suffering. And on the Day of Declaration, he will speak like a brother to all humanity. He will tell us, show us what we are, in fact, gods, potential gods. He will appeal to that divinity to share and to restore sanity to the world and to create justice and peace for everyone in the world. And he will give a vision of the future. We will see the extraordinary science of the future, the modes of transport of the future, which silent and effortless and without vibration, so that you can go on a journey of hundreds or thousands of miles and finish up perfectly relaxed and unfatigued. He will appeal to our best possible, highest possibilities, and we will be glad to respond. That will be a day in which many tears will be shed, but tears of joy, the tears of joy of humanity, inspired by the words of the Christ. That is coming as soon as we agree to the principle of sharing and justice for the world, and begin to put it into practice, and renounce war forever. We can do that and know the truth of our existence on planet Earth, why we are here, what we have to do, how we can evolve and begin again climbing the mountain and becoming what potentially we are, like the masters, divine. The masters are divine, but they have all been men and women in the world who, incarnation after incarnation, evolved bit by bit, slowly, painfully, bit by bit, to become what they are, which are perfect expressions of divinity. As far as planet Earth is concerned, we are not the most perfect planet, but as far as planet Earth is concerned, they are perfected.
Wow. Wow, that was, you know, you have some pretty nice energy, Mr. Krem.
I have been working with the Master and with Maitreya for 30-odd years. You know, I mean, it would be a surprise if I didn't have the right ideas.
Oh, you speak it exquisitely. I must say that when you were speaking, it reminded me of the movie The Ten Commandments.
Oh, yeah?
When they were speaking about Moses liberating the Jews from Egypt.
Yeah.
You very much got an energy in me that it's here, it's coming. I mean, it's here. It is, you know.
So we're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
We still have to listen to Maitreya and make the right choice.
Yeah.
Maitreya says, the choice is ours. But he says, my heart tells me your answer, your choice, and is glad.
Yeah.
So he knows before we know the answer that we will give.
Yeah.
And that is to accept the principle of sharing, put it into effect, banish war forever, and competition and greed between the nations, and accept the principle of cooperation as that which will lead us into the harmony and the unity which we're all longing for. All humanity long for unity.
Yeah.
That's why they join groups.
Yeah.
That's why they join political parties.
Yeah.
They're looking, searching for unity. And on the Day of Declaration, they will hear all of this from Maitreya. And as he speaks, his energy, the Christ principle, will flow out in tremendous potency. He said, it's as if I will embrace the whole world. People will feel it even physically.
Mm.
And this the Christ in us will respond to this energy and make an intuitive, heartfelt response to what he is saying. And on the physical plane, there will be hundreds of thousands of spontaneous miracle cures, healings throughout the planet. And in these three ways, by the overshadowing of the minds of humanity, by the outflow of the Christ principle, and by the healings throughout the world, you will know that that one, and of course only that one, is the Christ.
Wow. Wow. I'd like everybody to know that if you're in the New York area or anywhere, you know, possible, Mr. Krem is lecturing.
Okay, I'm going to stop that there because so we can give the updated information. That was indeed the interview. I'd like to welcome back Gary Willing to the show. Oh, wait, let me unmute Gary. Hi, Gary. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to finally talk to you again. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I don't know about you. Do you feel it?
Yeah, I always enjoy listening to his interviews, yes. Was that really a year? I guess that was a year ago. I was thinking before the call it was 2 years ago, but when I was talking about the star and everything, I was like, oh, that was last year. You're right.
Yeah, it was. I think April 2009 was the original broadcasting.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Well, and it was so auspicious hearing him speak a year ago and then, of course, being in the present with every, because it doesn't appear that it was, from my perspective, it's not war that is, you know, kind of like forcing humanity's hand. It's, it's oil. I mean, that's how I'm seeing it. You know, and all the relativity, because it's not just the fact that the oil is, you know, coming into the oceans, but the oil of, you know, the whole old consciousness of carbon-based vehicles and, you know, the big businesses that are running the oil companies that are fueling the wars. You know what I mean? It's
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really fascinating. But what I want to do is let me quickly share with everybody Mr. Krem's itinerary in the U.S., simply because everybody's here right now. So in the New York area, and by the way, all of Benjamin Krem's lectures are free. They're open to the public and free. They're exquisite. And it's so funny. Boy, how many times did I use the word exquisite in that interview? But he is, boy. His energy is just beautiful. Okay, so he's going to be at the Fashion Institute of Technology, FIT, the Haft Auditorium, Building C, second floor. What I'll do is, too, I will make a copy of this and post this on my Facebook page, just so everybody knows. Doors open at 1:30. For information, dial 212-665-9959. Then he's also doing a public meditation of the transmission meditation at the Hotel Pennsylvania, Skytop Ballroom, 18th floor. The info for that is 212-665, same number, 9959. It's Saturday and Sunday. Sorry, I'm not giving the dates. I'm all over the place here. July 24th is the public lecture. July 25th is the meditation, the transmission, the public transmission meditation. And I have listeners in Los Angeles, so let me tell you what's going on there. August 1st at 3 o'clock, the Veterans Memorial Auditorium, 4117 Overland Avenue in Culver City. Doors open at 2:30. Info for that, that's the public lecture, is 818-785-6300. And the public meditation on August 3rd at 7:30 p.m. is at the DoubleTree Guest Suites Hotel in Santa Monica on 1707 4th Street. And that's the same number, 818-785-6300. And in San Francisco, he's going to be at the Palace of Fine Art Theaters August 8th at 2 p.m. And he's going to be in August 10th. He's going to be, again in San Francisco, Fort Mason Center at 7:30 p.m. Again, I will post this The number for the San Francisco information is 510-841-3738. It'll be on the archive, so you can also just come back to the radio show. And if you have the opportunity to hear him lecture and experience the transmission meditations with him, I highly recommend it. It's really, really, it's so funny because it's very potent, subtle energy. That is the way I experienced it. So, Gary, how are you?
I'm very good. Also, too, about the energy at his lectures is actually some people have taken photographs of his lectures, and the blessings from Maitreya have shown up on the video or on the photograph.
Right.
And it's quite extraordinary. It's quite extraordinary. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Have you ever seen those?
The gold.
Photos? Yeah.
Yes,
like,
I believe I have. Yes, it's a gold energy. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You know, you talked about. I was listening to. When in the interview you were talking about the fear and this and the other thing when Mr. Krem you know, broke off there for a second. And, you know, you're talking about this golden light. Well, our group in Atlanta, I'm out of Atlanta, and a number of years, about 12 years ago, I guess, Mr. Krem came to Atlanta and we put on a little lecture for him. And there was a gentleman who was there. He's a fundamentalist, and he actually writes for a fundamentalist website at the time.
Okay.
He was, you know, it was back before the internet was really big, but he was kind of like, it would have been, I guess he would have been like a blogger back then, but they didn't really have blogs. But he, anyway, so he went to the lecture and he was sitting, I remember he was sitting probably in the second or third row right in front, and he wrote about how he saw this golden energy around Mr. Krem at the time of the overshadowing, and he was convinced that we had put this sophisticated light system in the ceiling and that's what was fooling the audience and all that kind of stuff. Well, it made me laugh because, you know, conspiracy theorists, you know, unite kind of thing. But I was actually the one in charge of the lighting system and not the lighting system, but the lights. I'm sorry, I take that back. And all I did was turn on the fluorescent lights during the lecture and turn it off. I mean, our group has absolutely zero money for anything other than advertising. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, we had like, I think during the entire time we were trying to divvy up like $1,000 for the room and the advertising and stuff. And this guy thinks we have like multi-million-dollar lighting system to fool the audience and stuff. It was funny. But I was literally the first.
Yeah, well, it's funny when people don't. Yeah, why? You know, well, and it's so funny because his beliefs would not allow him to see it as the true divinity. Because when I met Mr. Krem after the show, I did the show on a Thursday night and I met him on Saturday. When he held my hands, I literally dropped to the ground, sobbing. Yeah, it was. It felt almost like when Amachi, the woman, that woman from India who hugs.
Yeah.
I had the same response when I shook Benjamin Krem's hand. It was it was almost electrical. But it's funny, nothing. It's not like you get fried. It's an electrical hum of love. That it filled me up instantly. It was I was very moved by him, you know, very moved. And I did not know his schedule. That's why I would have planned the lecture, the interview tonight, had I known that he was going to be in the country, because I broke off from my transmission meditation group because of my own. I started going through stuff that. Personal stuff that was, you know, just I found it. I wasn't able to keep a commitment to almost anything. The only thing I basically stayed committed to was the radio show. But I went through, you know, some dark nights and some clearings, and you know, I'm still very much on the path. I just you know, it's been quite a ride for the last 12 months. But what I would definitely like to share is that, and actually I would like you to share it if you can, the status of Maitreya right now. I mean, let's share the good news. I don't know how many of my listeners know, so.
Yeah, so since the last interview, and you can go online and check it out for anybody can check it out for themselves, but if you go to YouTube and you type in Norway, the country Norway, you know, Norway, Spiral, you'll just get flooded with all these different videos. Well, the Norway spiral, it was reported, I saw it first on MSN, or I mean, was it MSNBC? Yeah, MSNBC.
Yep, yep.
And there was these, you know, wonderful videos of this spiral in the sky. I mean, if looking at it from just an observer standpoint, it looked like it took up half the sky, or at least a quarter of the sky. It was that huge. I mean, it was massive, and it just it looked like a galaxy, but a perfect circle, and it's this spiral thing. And it hung there for 10, 15 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, then of course, I mean, if they're not anything, they're predictable. The governments of the world started saying, you know, oh, it was a failed Russian missile launch. It was this, it was that. And, you know, and that kind of died down. But there was still this exuberance, you know, a grass, you know, kind of a blog, you know, looking at the blogs and stuff on the Internet, you know, people were still very intrigued by what was this thing. You know, some people thought it was a black hole that was appearing because it kind of disappeared into this kind of black hole. But they never found any debris. You know, one thing Mr. Krem says, he brings up a really good point, or he's brought up a really good point about the Norway spiral, is that, you know, Russia just doesn't shoot off nuclear missiles without letting anybody else, or, you know, any kind of missiles.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Not letting other people know, because, you know, NORAD or, you know, would go, you know, what are you doing? Are you starting World War III? You know, so they always.
Well, exactly. If you were to do that without telling anybody, that would be an aggressive move. I mean,
you got that
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And then in June, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was this summer, there was another smaller-looking spiral over Australia, and Mr. Krem said that was indeed the same star that he was talking, the star-like luminary, the spacecraft from one of those planets. And then there was something, it hasn't been confirmed by Mr. Krem, but there was, it just happened on the 7th of July, that was a Wednesday, in China, there was a video of a UFO that was in the sky, and it, according to the, you know, I haven't really, you know, dug very deeply into it, but according to the internet sites, it was a mainstream internet site, MSN, it said that they had shut down air traffic over, I think it was in Shanghai, if I'm not mistaken, but they had shut down the aircraft, or the, you know, the planes, because they didn't know what this thing was. And China has come out and said, we have no idea what this was. Well, now they're saying, it's so funny, now they're kind of, I was wondering how they were going to spin this. Was this like oh, let me go back. Like, first it was, the Norway spiral was a failed Russian missile launch. Then the one that happened in Australia just happened to be a private rocket that had failed from Cape Canaveral. That was, I mean, it's actually, it's almost kind of pathetic. Their excuses are kind of pathetic, but, you know, whatever. This one, actually, they said, because I was wondering how they were going to spin this one, because it just seems to be happening more and more and more. They said photoshopped. It was a photoshopped photograph over Afghanistan. Now, why would that shut down aircraft or planes over the airport? It just, you know, it seems like they're really kind of reaching for excuses for this, but as Mr. Krem himself has said many times in the last few months over these interviews, that there is going to be more and more and more and more UFO sightings, more and more of these, you know, very dramatic UFO sightings. Now, he didn't really touch on it very much in your interview that, you know, you replayed, but he said that emphatically, and same thing with Mr. Adamski, George Adamski, who was a ufologist who claimed to make personal contact with some space brothers from Venus and from Mars and Jupiter. They both say unequivocally that they are 100% harmless, they're friendly, and they're here to help us. They've helped us in many, many times in crisis where if they wouldn't have helped us, we probably could have gone right over the edge, you know, and they're here to help. They've been helping mop up the nuclear radiation that we've been spewing into our atmosphere. One thing Mr. Krem didn't mention is that in the interview with you is that, you know, modern science postulates or has proven that there's three levels of physicality, right? Solid physical, liquid physical, and gas, correct?
Right.
I mean, everybody was taught that in school. Well, if you ever read, you know, Alice Bailey or Mr. Krem's work or Madame Blavatsky or Helena Roerich, they've been saying for, you know, over 100 years that there's actually four other levels of physicality above gas, which is the etheric. There was a gentleman named William Reich who was a colleague of, I think, Sigmund Freud. He was a psychoanalyst who moved more into the realm of science, and he discovered what he called the orgone. Orgone, he said, was an energy field around all living things around the entire planet, and he discovered the etheric planes. It was a wonderful discovery that most people don't even realize happened. Now, he saw it as one plane, but in reality, it's actually four. Now, so when Mr. Krem said that these spacecraft were made on Mars, Jupiter, Venus, you know, or and Saturn or something like that, wherever they are, most of the spacecraft are made on Mars. You know, if we were to go there, and if we could get on a rocket and go to Mars, we would see nothing unless we had etheric vision. If we could see the etheric planes, which some people can, and he said more and more people will be born with etheric sight. It has something to do with the eye. If you had etheric vision, you would see that on Mars, it's just teeming with life. There's more people actually living on Mars than there are on planet Earth, and it's a much smaller planet. And he went on to say in one of his interviews, and that's the reason why they're so small, the people there are so tiny, is because there's so many people crammed on this little planet. Same thing with Venus. You know, if you go to Venus, you know, there's been pictures from the Russian probe that they sent, you know, a number of years ago to Venus, and, you know, it just looks desolate, you know. But there on Venus is teeming with life. Venus is a very, very, very advanced planet. It's one of the most advanced in our solar system. And it's esoterically, it relates to the planet Earth the same way the human soul, it is to planet Earth as the human soul is to the personality. So that's how far advanced it is than our planet.
Okay.
But it is, if that makes any sense. It's just, you know, it's the alter ego of our planet. You know,
okay.
Is
it where we go when we evolve?
Well, you know, some people probably do go to the higher planet. Some people stay, you know, when they become masters, some people stay, you know, some of the masters stay here and help, like Maitreya or Jesus. Others go to the higher planets, you know, like Jupiter or Neptune or Uranus or Mercury. Or there's a couple planets that haven't been discovered yet because we can't see around the sun.
Right.
That are more advanced than ours. And then other masters go to the solar. Actually, our solar system, it is not very involved, actually is quite lucky because the proximity, it's very, very close. It's actually sitting right next to another solar system, Sirius, which you can see. It's called the Dog Star. You can really see it in the summertime right above the horizon. It's kind of a bluish-looking star. And I believe the closest star to our sun. Anyway, that solar system is unbelievably advanced. It's actually one of the seven sacred solar systems in the galaxy. So according to Alice Bailey, she said that when a person becomes a master, a lot of times they go to Sirius. Just a little side note, it really doesn't, you know, you can believe
it.
Well,
it's interesting that you say that. Because the being I met was from Sirius. Yeah, so that's interesting to me personally. So.
Yeah, so to put it in perspective, the evolution of Sirius is so advanced, you know, so fast for whoever goes there. Leonardo da Vinci, when he became a master, went to Sirius. But another gentleman who's a painter, an Italian Renaissance painter, his name is Andre Mantegna. And he lived... I can't remember exactly when he lived. He lived, I think, before Rembrandt. So I'd say probably, I'm just guessing, you know, if you Google him, I'm sure you could find it. You know, 1500s, 1400s, something like that. So he was at the same level, slightly above the same level as Albert Einstein. He wasn't, at that time, if Picasso was a second-degree initiate, almost a third-degree initiate, he was in between a second and a third. Picasso would have been more evolved than Andre Mantegna at this time. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, 600 years ago, whatever it was, he was at the same evolutionary point as Picasso was 30 years ago, whatever. Well, Andre Mantegna went to Sirius after, according to Mr. Krem, went to Sirius. And within that, you know, he had a couple more lifetimes before he became a master, went to Sirius. He is now at the same point of evolution as Maitreya. That's how fast the evolution is on that. And, you know, we have no idea exactly what that entails. But, you know, so when Maitreya says that the path that awaits us as a humanity is far beyond what we could possibly imagine for ourselves, that's what he's talking about. I mean, it really is not just necessarily talking about Sirius, but he's talking about the divinity within ourselves. It's, you know, once you become a master, it's wide open. You can go anywhere. You can go to the higher planets and do that. You can hang out here with some of the spiritual slow folks like ourselves, you know, and try to get us along, you know, whatever. Or you can go to Sirius and the evolution is very, 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 very fast and become a master and the higher masters and everything like that. So, but that's beside the point where, you know, but to kind of bring it up to date, so there was these, you know, at least two confirmed, very public and very, kind of went all over the world, the news systems all over the world, of this star, like luminary. The third one has yet to been confirmed, but, you know, I would be shocked if it was truly a photoshopped copy of a missile over Afghanistan and China that just happened this month. But, as Mr. Krem said, there'd be more and more and more and more UFOs, or spacecraft sightings or UFO sightings around the world. Where he said where there was one, there might be 10. If there's 10, there might be 100 sightings, you know. So, and then the interesting thing that happened this year is that the crop circles, you know, most people are familiar with crop circles. They've been around for decades, right?
Yeah.
They're becoming more and more elaborate and more and more, I mean, they're quite beautiful. And anyway, the first crop circle to have been formed this year was in the shape of a star. And it was to hint about the star of Maitreya. And Mr. Krem says the majority of crop circles happen in southern England, and it's a way of, kind of a roundabout way of the Space Brothers letting everybody know that the Christ is in England. But anyway, so then...
No, but there's another big thing that Ben talked about this year as well.
Exactly.
Okay. As long as you're getting to that.
Leading up to it.
Okay, good job. Okay, my bad.
Now we're going to go back. Exactly.
Okay.
He said that the star had done its work, and Maitreya made his first interview on U.S. television.
He has come. So that is what he said in the interview, is the day of emergence has happened. Not the day of declaration, but the day of emergence. Right.
He has officially, and as of an interview I heard from Mr. Krem about, from Mr. Krem in, I think it was July the 7th, if I'm not mistaken, he had already done 20 interviews. Now, I personally have not seen him on TV. I'm looking, and I'm not scouring. It was a little side note, there was a gentleman, an author, who a lot of people were suspecting to be Maitreya. And is in
the Indian guy?
Yeah, Raj Patel.
That's it. Yeah, I was going to say, because it showed up on YouTube as this could be...
Oh, yeah, it's all over YouTube. And
right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's certainly the same message. I watched some of his interviews, and if it's not Maitreya, he is indeed speaking the same message, so...
Exactly. Now, he is actually, Raj Patel himself has come out and said that he is not Maitreya. He has no idea, you know, who Mr. Krem's talking about. And actually, I don't think he's really ever, you know, read anything that Ben has said or anything like that, but he has, you know, he's not really.
Well, wouldn't he have to do that, Gary? I mean, he would still have to say he's not, he can't say he's that and then. I mean, cover is blown.
According to Mr. Krem, if Maitreya, when asked, he will not confirm or deny that he is Maitreya.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So,
okay.
And the same thing with Mr. Krem, because people have tried to corner him. There was a gentleman who wrote a piece about him and was trying to corner Mr. Krem and saying, you know, is Raj Patel Maitreya?
Okay.
And he himself, you know, and I can see where Mr. Krem's coming from. He's saying, you know, it's not his job to confirm or deny, you know,
exactly.
who, you know, but, you know, and it's, Yeah, and so it, when I've seen Maitreya, he, just what Mr. Krem says happened to me. It's like he doesn't say a lot of stuff. He doesn't say a lot of extraneous words, and you know, he doesn't have to elaborate on anything. He just says it, and it's just like, you know, when Mr. Krem was talking about that aspect of Maitreya, when he talks heart to heart, when he speaks heart to heart with people on TV or whatever, or individually or to groups or whatever, you know, it's just like, not to quote a movie, because I like to quote movies, but I'm trying not to, you know.
That's okay.
Like,
people resonate with movies. Quote movies.
Yeah.
I think that's, yeah.
Okay, so it's like listening to Mozart. You can't add anything to it. You can't take anything away from it. You can't say, well, you know, I wish you would have played a C chord. It's perfect. You know, it's like it's like looking at, you know, a masterpiece of a painting and going, you know, I think Leonardo da Vinci should have put a little bit more red in there. It's like nobody says that kind of stuff. I mean, I guess there are people that probably do think that, but, you know, I mean, in reality, they're really, it's a, you know, the Mona Lisa is perfect in the way that it's very, very simple.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, and people respond to the Mona Lisa, a little side note too about it, is because of the spiritual light emanating from that painting. That's the reason why more people have seen that painting than any other painting in the world. And they travel all over the world to see it in the Louvre, you know. But it's the same thing with Maitreya. He doesn't have to say a lot of words. There was a funny anecdote that Mr. Krem said years and years ago. There was a gentleman who saw Maitreya, I think, as Maitreya, not as a familiar. I believe he saw him at a lecture that he was giving in London. And he went to Mr. Krem and he goes, you know, you talk way too much. He goes, I don't have to even listen to what Maitreya is saying. It's just, it penetrates your heart. And that's really, that I think when you see him on TV, you know, that's going to be the indication of whether he's Maitreya or not. It's the energy behind it. You walk away going, you know, and so when somebody else like myself or, you know, like Mr. Krem is even saying, I don't really have that experience with Mr. Krem where, you know, when I hear him talk, I say, you know, I'd say it differently this way. I mean, I can kind of get it like, well, you know, it's pretty much right on, you know, when you look at
yeah,
like
that's
myself,
what I get
you might
as well.
Say, well,
you
talk too much, you should have said this, maybe I would have said it differently, sure, you know, but when Maitreya speaks, it's not like he's putting a spell on anybody, it's just the heart-to-heart connection. And when I've seen him in his familiars, he said some very impactful things to me that were just the most simple things. Like, for instance, there was a time, this was probably, this was in 1998,
okay.
And I was working as a musician in a hotel in Atlanta. And I was on break, and this guy comes over, and I see this guy. He looks like a homeless guy. And I worked at a very fancy, it was a Renaissance hotel. It was a 4-star hotel, and you didn't see any homeless people walking in and about. So I see this guy, and I'm reading a book, and I don't even know what made me think it, because I don't go around thinking these kind of things, but I said, that guy looks like Maitreya. And as soon as I thought that to myself, I didn't say it out loud, but as soon as I thought that to myself, his eyes turned and met mine. And there was this very intense gaze. Like I heard, you know, somebody's looking at me, or, you know, I heard somebody saying something about him, you know, or something like that.
Right.
And I thought to myself, well, if he wants to come over, he can come over. If not, that's, you know, fine. And he comes immediately over to me.
Hmm.
And he starts crying. But I don't think that he's bipolar or anything. I don't think there's anything strange about him, this guy crying in front of me, right? And I asked him, I said, is there a problem? And he goes, it breaks my heart to see people eating and, you know, drinking wine and spending hundreds of dollars on food, or, you know, $70, $80 on food, and there are people that go to bed hungry every day.
Mm.
And, you know, it really impacted me. You talked about the energy from Ben, and this is what made me want to tell the story, is I shook his hand and I could feel the energy coming off of him, and it released whatever was pent up inside of me, and I just felt so free, you know, like I could just sit down and talk with a complete stranger, you know. It was really weird.
Yeah.
So we start talking back and forth, and, you know, a little personal note, you know, I mean, at that time I was just a musician, and since then I've started painting and it's totally changed my life, but he goes, you know, I see you somewhat as a, like Rembrandt or a Picasso. And I was like, you know, I mean, I don't see myself as a Rembrandt or a Picasso, but, you know, it was kind of, I think it was a subtle hint about painting, you know, like maybe you should try painting, you know. So I tried painting, and it's changed my life, you know. But one thing that he said that I thought was very interesting, and I never knew why he said it up until like about 3 or 4 years ago at the U.S. Social Forum in Atlanta. So people can follow what I'm saying. But he said there was a guy at Coca-Cola that was about to get fired. He was a vice president of Coke. And he told me his name, but I've forgotten it. And he said he's a good person. He has a good heart. He's just letting money get in the way. And so I kind of took it personally to myself, like maybe I'm letting money get in the way or something like that. Anyway, a few years ago, I was at this forum. It was called the U.S. Social Forum. They just had one a month or so ago in Detroit. And people from all over the world come there. It was a wonderful experience here. And people are, they're about social justice issues. They're about the environment. People are talking about these kind of things. And it was really a great thing. But anyway, we had our group had a booth about Maitreya there and all that kind of stuff, of course. And these two girls came up, and they were talking about Coca-Cola. And Coca-Cola is actually headquartered here in Atlanta. And they were talking about Killer Coke and how Coke goes into these countries, and which is true, and they go into these countries and they tap into their only water source for, feeding their crops or their livestock, and they use that to create sodas or Dasani water for pennies cheaper than they could make it here in the States. So they go into these third world countries, and that's where they're doing. And it's driving these people out, and they have to migrate to a whole other area away from their homeland because they can't use their wells anymore and stuff like that. It's just horrible what Coca-Cola does sometimes.
Yeah.
And anyway, so they're calling it Killer Coke. And they were going to protest Coke, and they wanted me to go with them. And I said, unfortunately, I'm the only one here, and I can't leave. And I said, can I make a suggestion to you? And they said, sure. And I told him that story about the time that I saw Maitreya, and I said there was a guy that he mentioned by name about he was about to get fired. And they're like, who is it? I was like, I can't remember the guy's name. And I said, but that's not important. I said my suggestion is, he told me he was a good person, he had a good heart, he was just letting money get in the way. And I said, rather than going there and fighting them or protesting them, why don't you go there and try to remind these people that they're good people, they have a good heart, they're just letting money get in the way. And I never really saw the connection between the two, but I wondered if that's the reason why he said that to me. Do you know what I'm saying? At that time, I have no idea.
To relay that message, exactly.
I don't know, but it was just, they walked away, we could do that, and they just walked away. They seemed so much more hopeful about the whole situation than they were going, when they approached the table. And to me, it's that simple wisdom that people will find in Maitreya's words. It's the same simple wisdom that people have responded to Jesus 2,000 years ago and the Buddha 2,500 years ago. It's that same wisdom, but can you imagine bringing it up to date and relaying it to modern problems and the modern, Jesus said 2,500 years ago, feed my sheep. Well, people, it's amazing how simple that teaching was, but yet it blows right past people, and people find it very difficult to relay that to their own lives and help those who are the least among them, and they don't want to, they pass by homeless people, they pass by, this, that, and the other, and they don't want to give any money, they don't want to do anything like that, which is their right to do if they don't want to do that. But, Maitreya is going to come, and he's not going to say, feed your sheep. He's going to say, we need to share the whole resources of the world, and stuff like that. It's just bringing it up to date, and I think that's the miracle of what we're about to experience with seeing Maitreya on TV and experiencing the Masters and all that kind of stuff. So,
don't you feel that the conscious – oh, I'm sorry. You kept me going. No, I don't like how I got to work on my interrupting skills. I'm very bad at that. Actually, I'm a good interrupter, but I don't want to be a good interrupter. I'm sorry. You know what it is? It's this energy in me. I don't even know how to keep my mouth shut. It's like, oh, my God, I got to say something. But I do apologize. Sorry. Please finish your thought. Yes, finish. Yes, please. Okay, speak.
No, I was finished. Go ahead. I'm positive. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right with it, actually. So.
Because what I'm noticing is, and your story really points it out poignantly, is that people don't want to be yelled at anymore. I think everybody, this consciousness, it's happening within us. life isn't shifting because we've picked up spiritual books. We've picked up spiritual books because life is shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And the shifting that's taking place, it just no longer responds to the Piscean energy, as Benjamin put it. You know, it's like the Piscean energy seemed to be very much about, you know, in order to understand the whole, we had to separate ourselves. Where now, in order to understand the whole, we have to unify. And unification, I mean, I see it with the kids. Like, when he was saying that, or was it you that was saying, you know, that they're going to have a vision. These kids are going to be able to see the etheric plane. That's absolutely my experience with the three-year-old I take care of. I mean, she's telling me there's a group of beings called Lalas, and they talk to her. Like, I mean, she recently got inoculated, her three-year inoculation, and I got very worried about it because, you know, I was like, oh, my God, you know, I've heard, you know, kids can go autistic because of it, and, you know, her parents are, you know, very much in that frame of reference. That's what they do. They're loving people, but, you know, they're going to inoculate their kids. And I went up to her and I was like, the day after she got it, I was like, did you talk to Lala's? What did Lala say about, you know, the shot you got? And she turned to me, we were in the pool, and she goes, it's just energy. I went, well, all righty then. I can tell when the words she's speaking are not her three-year-old vocabulary. It was actually Lala's coming through to me. And that's her name for it. I honor if that's her name for it. I mean, the other day I'm going to work, and like this past week I've been really drained. I mean, waking up after 8 hours of sleep exhausted. And, you know, it happens to me sometimes, but I'm usually a pretty vibrant person. And then finally it shifted, and I woke up one day and I was like, oh my God, thank you. You know, I've got my energy back. I don't feel like I'm, you know, dragging 100 bricks behind me. And my three-year-old, Sahana, she goes to me, I can smell your energy and I can sense it. I mean, she just walked back by me and goes, I can smell your energy. I went, oh, you can? I went, does it smell okay? She's like, yeah. And then she looked at me and she's like, I can just sense it. And I'm like, yeah, I came back today. You know, or at least what felt like me came back. And she picks up on everything.
Wow.
So they really are. I mean, they're here. And I see this at the playground all the time. They're having conversations, what appears to be is the air. You know, and it's not the air. They see beings all over the place. I find it actually very, very hopeful because, you know, I always say the more I hang out with them, hey, the more they're helping my energy be there or my state of being be there. So,
sure.
You know, but it's like, you know, no, it just seems like everything right now is the old is dying. Because has Benjamin or any of, you know, even you personally, any wisdom to share on, you know, not only the Gulf now, I guess China also had a recent oil spill as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it
seems pretty, you know, pretty dark.
You know, it's interesting. I was listening to, and I hate to quote Ben, but I was listening to one of his recent interviews, and somebody asked him point blank about, did the masters have any suggestions about the Gulf oil spill?
Right.
And, if, you know, of course, you know, I was very upset about it, because more so that I was felt out of control and I felt helpless, because it's not like you can just strap on a wetsuit and don a
and help the animals,
and just swim down there and fix the thing. You know, so we're kind of at the mercy of the corporations and fixing it. But the one thing that he said that I found very interesting, and it really drove it home again, is he goes, from the master's point of view, the damage that was done to the Gulf is not even close to the damage that we do every single day from every single nuclear reactor and nuclear testing and all that kind of stuff around the world. That's doing far more damage to the environment than this oil spill. And he said,
really?
Oh, absolutely. And he said, one of the things that Maitreya will do first when asked
about, right,
you know, about the environment, is he's going to say very sternly, shut down those, you know, nuclear reactors now. You know, shut them down, every one of them down. And we can actually change it very easily to a fusion. I always get those two aspects confused.
I think fusion is cold. Cold fusion, actually. Cold fusion, yeah.
Fusion, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we could do that we already have the technology to do that now. It's just the only problem is that it's too expensive. So it's cost-cutting aspect that's keeping it from doing. And, of course, you know, one of the things that scared me very much about John McCain becoming president was he wanted to basically create a bill that would, you know, fund, 10, 12 more of these reactors, you know, which would probably just send us right over the edge. And, of course, Obama is going right along with it. Remember, he's wanting to do the same thing, maybe not at the extent of McCain, but, you know, thankfully it takes, you know, a decade or so or 8 years or whatever. So hopefully by that point we'll have, you know, come to our senses about the whole thing. But the Maitreya says that the energy of the future that's awaiting humanity is a totally clean, totally safe, free, available for all. He calls it the technology of light. And it will be given by the Space Brothers to humanity, but only when war is a thing of the past. There can never be, because this technology is quite powerful, and if it was put into the wrong hands, it could destroy everybody, you know. And so, obviously, that aggressive intentions and all those kind of things and justice needs to be in the world. Once that happens, then humanity will be given this wonderful technology that will transform everything. And even the buildings that we work in or live in or whatever will be, by the shape of the buildings, will store energy. Can you imagine? And, you know, Ben's master wrote an article not too long ago when he said that, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the article in front of me, but, you know, to try to imagine what it's like for somebody from another planet like Mars or Venus to come here and see every building looking the same, because their cities are actually planned as works of art, and they also are storage houses of energy. So each city in the planning of it allows for a certain amount of greenery, a certain amount of this, so people feel, you know, have this freedom to go in and out, you know. But they were talking about the energy aspect of it, that the buildings of themselves store the energy too, you know.
Well,
and
yeah,
so,
they're conscious, I would assume.
I don't know. It has to do with shape power. Like, for instance, you know, the pyramids were built. The pyramid shape is designed, if it's aligned with the poles, north to south, channels astral energy or the emotional energy. At the time when the pyramids were built, that was the highest aspect that humanity could use, was emotional energy. And so it created, unfortunately, it has such a strong hold on humanity. The desire principle has such a strong hold on humanity right now. That's what's really holding us back. But in the future, the shape of this coming time is the tetrahedron, which is not, it looks like a pyramid. Instead of having a square base, it actually has an equilateral triangle as the base too. So you're talking, was it 1, 2, 3, 4 equilateral triangles? Rather than having four triangles.
That's the Merkaba, isn't it?
I don't know what that is. No,
okay.
Well,
keep going.
Like a pyramid, you know, you have an equilateral triangle on each side, and it creates at the base, it creates a square, right? If you were to lift up the pyramid.
Oh, I see.
If you look at a tetrahedron, if you lifted it up, it would be another equilateral triangle. And
exactly.
So that shape, if it's aligned north to south, actually channels mental energy, which is the next level up from astral. So it has something to do with shape power, and in the coming time, shapes will store power, store energy, you know, and they have an energy of their own. But it's a science that, you know, we are just probably not even scratching the surface on. You know, shape power in art, shape and, you know, shapes have, you know, in art have different energies from what I understand it, you know, and geometry and different things like that. So
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, these Space Brothers, like he's saying, are here to help, and they're here. They're also laying down a platform for Maitreya to come out in the world, but they're also laying down a platform for this future technology. So I agree with what you're saying, is that it's, you know, the oil is bringing everything to a head. You know, and the other thing that you said at the, in the interview with Ben, once he broke off, we were talking about the fear. Well, it's, you know, the reason why, you know, countries go after these resources is because they're, you know, they're finite resources. They're not, you know, meant
right.
to be around forever, you know. So if that's the only thing you're thinking of, well, of course you want to be in control. You don't want China or some other country to be in control of the only resource, whew, you know.
Yeah.
But we don't need it. You know, in the future, we
exactly.
won't need it anymore. You know, and so, you know, one of the things I found very enlightening that Mr. Krem mentioned at one of our conferences out in San Francisco a number of years ago, he was talking about the life that ensouls each planet. And one of the things that it does, you know, each planet is actually ensouled by what is called a logos, you know, or, you know, what we would consider to be God, but on a planetary level. There's God, obviously, on a planetary level. There's God on a solar level from the sun, and there's God on a cosmic level or galactic level, and on up infinite. But
okay.
Probably the closest thing that we could even imagine God to be would be the planetary logos. That's probably about as high as we could even, and we're not even touching his consciousness. I'm just talking about just as a possibility or as a thought. You know, it's
okay.
maybe the planetary logos. You know, there's a being that's so evolved that the masters, they call him the one whom not can be said, not because it's bad to talk about him, but because they don't even have a concept of his consciousness, you know, so they can't even, so what do you talk about, you know?
Right,
but,
right.
But
wow.
The life that ensouls a planet, you know, he said one of the things that they have to do is they figure out the best place to put all these different resources so that when the time comes, you know, of course humanity will go through a period of fighting over the different resources. That's probably natural. But in order to create create cooperation among the different people. So it's, they don't put all the resources, they don't give everybody the same resources, you know, equally, because that wouldn't
right,
be a
right,
everybody
right,
would have
right.
everything. So they put oil here, they put diamonds here, they put coal, you know, and so forth. Because they know eventually everyone's going to fight over it, but eventually it will lead to cooperation, which leads me to my next point, where he talks about sharing. You know, what the masters will say is the best possible thing for the sharing of the world's resources will be to create a UN agency that's totally devoted to the sharing of the resources of the world, headed by an initiate of somebody like a, you know, Abraham Lincoln, like that kind
right.
of level of person, or higher, maybe even a master.
Right.
And they will be entrusted with, basically, every nation has excesses of some things and needs of others. So it would basically create, like an inventory of everything that it develops or creates or farms or you know, the resources that it has. And it would create kind of an inventory of this. It would submit it to this agency. And it, like, for instance, great nations like the United States would obviously have a lot more to give than, let's say, a country, I'm just throwing it off the top of my head, you know, maybe a country from the middle part of Africa that might just have one or two things in excess of something. And so they would, but they might have great needs of a lot of things. So they would, let's say a country just puts in cotton. That's the only thing that they have excesses of, but they need oil or they need this. So other countries like Iraq might have a lot of oil in excess just sitting there. So
right.
they would give oil to whatever country. This country would give diamonds or whatever they have or copper in excess of to such and such. That's where they're talking about sharing the resources. It's on a national and an international level. Not
right.
A lot of people think it, you know, totally personally, they'll say, oh, my God, are the masters going to, and some governmental force going to come in and just take all the money out of my account and send it over to the Philippines or somewhere else? Well, of course not. Yeah, it goes against the whole notion of free will, you know.
Right,
but
right.
This type of sharing was done right after World War II. It was called the Marshall Plan, where General George C. Marshall, who was then the Secretary of State, if I'm not mistaken, derived a plan where the United States made an inventory of what it had in excess, and it gave it to Western Europe. Western Europe needed a bunch because their economy was totally ruined. You know, the infrastructure was destroyed. But they had excesses of certain things that they gave to the United States. There was a lease-lend kind of thing.
Okay.
And it totally revolutionized, it totally transformed the economies of those two nations, of the United States and of
countries,
Europe.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, didn't we do that with Japan, too, after we, like, you know, bombed the crap out of them, basically?
You know, that's a very good point. I don't know. I'd have to research that on. I honestly don't know.
Okay.
But it's interesting you brought that up. But the other thing was is that looking at it over the last 50 years or so, what nations did the United States trust more than any other nation? England, France, Germany. I mean, all the countries that we shared with are the
right.
countries that we trust the most. So Maitreya says that trust is the foundation for peace, obviously. The
right.
only way to create trust is to create justice in the world, and the only way to create justice in the world is to share the resources. It happened one time very briefly, and from the master's point of view, it was the only time that the soul of the United States came out. Every other time, it's always been the personality of the country. And so he said the masters have been saying for decades that the whole world is just waiting for the soul of this country, of the United States, to come out. Because
blossom.
That's
yeah.
how beautiful it happened. It was just, it was given freely. They took it. They gave us whatever they had.
Yeah.
And it revolutionized everything. But they're talking about this on a worldwide scale, obviously. So then
yeah.
every nation trusts every other nation. So,
yeah.
you know.
Well,
and,
I think we
and
touched upon it at 9/11, though, with that whole, there was, you know,
absolutely.
With the whole blood banks were all filled. Now, I get that it's not resources per se, like, you know, the food that's obviously necessary. But I think it's the same thread of consciousness that we just gave unconditionally, you know,
but
for the moment what it needed.
You bring up a really good point, because I was actually thinking about 9/11 as I was talking about it, is it also, after 9/11, all the countries, even Libya, I remember them talking about Gaddafi was even saying, wow, that was pretty messed up what they did. We are so sorry that happened.
Yeah.
But even our former enemies were, like, really sympathetic. I mean, it was true sympathy for what happened. And
yeah.
if they would have taken the advice of the masters, because there was a letter that was written to several months before 9/11 that was written to the White House that there was a potential attack and blah, 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 and that
right.
if they do attack, don't do anything, that it would they would have. We'd be living in a totally different world right now.
It would have shifted the planet at that point. Because I think we had the potential because of all the momentum we built up. That everybody was afraid that, you know, remember 1999 shifting over the. I mean, Y2K was only part of it. There were people that believed we might go into World War III and the end of the world in 2000, which I'm starting to understand almost as it's like the paradoxical energy. When we think we're closest to our darkness, our true compassion is birthed. Because if you look at the same thing is happening now with the oil, you know, more and more people are talking about, you know, there's a potential we could die if we don't have clean water from the perspective of just the third dimension. If we keep polluting the water, we could die. And this is when you see people genuinely going into their own experience and going, dear God, help me. And, you know, God, I think, as an experience is very different than the dogma most people have been taught. And, you know, instead of a rule and a judgment, literally the birthing of compassion is happening. Because that's,
absolutely.
Like Benjamin says, the truth of who we are is we are gods ourselves. And gods, of course, are compassionate to everything because it is the expression of the logos, I mean, of the planet. It's who we are. It really is not what we've been taught to be or conditioned to be, but genuinely who we are.
Yeah, in the latest article that Mr. Krem's master talks about exactly what you're talking about. It's on the Share International website if you go to it. It's the July-August article, and he was talking about unity, how humanity has never been, is not, and will never be separate. We're part of a seamless whole of things. And he said that God is justice. God is sharing. God is brotherhood. God is, you know, all those things that you just mentioned, you know.
Right.
You know, which I, you know, if you looked at, you know, compassion as an umbrella. It covers justice, sharing, and you know,
exactly.
I mean, it covers
exactly.
all that stuff.
In a word,
it's really in a word. That's what it is. You know, I mean,
yeah.
if you took those three aspects in one word, yeah, it's compassion. You don't
yeah.
just walk by somebody that's hungry and say, yeah, you know, that's too bad. That's really
yeah. Let's go
bad.
Get a pizza.
You know, I in October of last year, I went to the Philippines to. I married a Filipino girl, and so I went to the Philippines and I met her family and all that kind of stuff. But the conditions that some people were living, it's heart wrenching. You know, I mean, there's families
yeah.
literally living on the street. You know, and you see little kids just lying there asleep. You know, and if I had anything, I wanted to give it to them. You know, it was anything. But
yeah.
And so there was a, you know, you were talking about humanity waking up, you know, and I was thinking about my experience in the Philippines and seeing all these people. But I was watching on the Internet just a few weeks ago, Barbara Bush, George Bush's daughter, heads up an organization about healthcare for people around. I think it was the Justice for Healthcare or something like that, or Healthcare
yeah.
Justice, or I'm not saying it correctly, but she had an experience where she was in Africa and she saw this young girl who was too sick to stand up and how that changed her life. You know, if you can imagine if her father
yeah.
had only had that same experience, you know, I mean, it's just, we'd be living in a whole different world, you know, and how, you know, people, you have to see, like Mr. Krem says over and over again, you have to see your brother as yourself. You know, you have to see that. You know, you know, there was a gentleman I was watching on TV just the other day. They were talking about the debt crisis in Greece. And he broke down and started crying. And he called himself a parasite. And the guy said, the journalist said, why are you referring to yourself as a parasite? And he goes, I have no job. He goes, I can't give anything to my daughter. And he just, it was the hopelessness. It was the utter self, he just had no self worth for himself. And you know, the thing that I've known about this story for so long, and one of the things that this information has done for me is it's made me have faith in the fact that everybody counts and there's hope and there's this. More than anything, you know, more than the fact that there's, you know, the Christ is in the world and all that kind of stuff, which is just massive in and of itself, it's
right.
to bring it home for myself is every single person matters. Every single person counts. Every single person has something to give. And here is this guy, because of the economic situation in the world, he felt, I could feel it. He felt like he was like, I can't even provide for my daughter. He said, I couldn't even give her an ice cream cone if I wanted. You know, I mean, how, and this guy actually was probably doing pretty well. You know, can you imagine people in the third world who look at their children and they're dying and they can't give them health care and they can't give them the food that they need and they can't give them simple drops for their eyes to cure blindness. I mean, it's just, they have nothing. And that is what Maitreya is saying. We need to change right now. We need to change it right now because...
Well, we need to feel it because, you know, it's an awareness that's shifting, not a... The truth has always been the truth. They are us. You know, because I definitely believe that a lot of the stuff that's happening on the planet is the level of imbalanced, whatever you want to call it, is a level of imbalance within the consciousness of humanity. Don't worry about her.
no, you're right.
And so it's really about, you know, when we stop oppressing, suppressing the messages that our bodies are telling us, because we are starving. You know, I work in one of the wealthiest areas, you know, I would say of this country, which is probably also of this world. You can't believe they're starving for love. They're starving for a sense of belonging. They have the physical luxuries, and they are starving. And
I remember you saying that last year.
Yeah, and so the balancing is, ironically, so now we're going to take away the thing that we all use, water, which is also, which is interesting from the pyramid point of view, water is also the symbolic of emotions. You know, so it's like we're coming into our darkest night because we've been dark. We just have been ignoring it, suppressing it, oppressing it. We've been distracting ourselves. We've been drugging ourselves. And I'm starting to get, even from my own personal experiences, it's not a time to beat yourself up for being unaware. It's really a time to honor that the awareness is coming in. And our bodies are shifting, and we're going to need more rest, and we're going to have to live in passion. And as we shift what's happening to the body, it will be so natural for us to walk by a person who has less fortune than us and want to share with that person everything that we have that we can give, which won't be just money and time. It'll be, I mean, I have seen smiling, how smiling at some of these people have shifted them. Just being smiled at. I mean, I can't even imagine when, you know, people start just, you know, like genuinely loving ourselves. Because when we talk about the resources, I get that, you know, the Piscean Age talked about the oils and the diamonds. But when I look at Africa, I see the resource of the wild animals and the shamanism and the wisdom that goes with those wild animals is what that continent brings to us as a planet. The wisdom of unconditional love and the wisdom of stalking oneself and the birds, you know, we're going to go so beyond the third dimensional assets to the soul's assets. And the soul's assets have always existed. We just weren't aware of them. And so we're becoming aware of what looks, I mean, if you look at it, it's the same as like the planet. What appears to be desolate and non-inhabitable is filled with beings who are in a higher space than we are. You know, I have a feeling Antarctic is going to open up and these, you know, deserts as being real power sources when the tetrahedron comes in. You know what I mean? When all the new frequencies come in, the autistic children are not going to be quiet anymore. They are going to have so much to teach. So much to teach. Because everything that's been like living on a higher dimension, we're going to become aware of. So that which was in the third dimension is almost going to be deemed useless. It's just not going to be what we need anymore. What we need is the etheric world because that's our time. Our time is now waking up. We've been living half lives by not including or being aware or utilizing the etheric level of physicality. I don't know where this is coming from, Gary.
Well, at least if they included the fourth, those third, you know, the levels of the etheric, we wouldn't have the, you know, the problems with the radiation. You know, I mean, that you're absolutely right. I mean, we have to include all that too. You know, and the other thing that's very interesting too is there's a gentleman named. I don't. How much time do we have left?
We've got like 5 more minutes. Let's because this is good. Let's. I don't want to stop.
Okay.
Keep going.
No, that's okay. That's okay. You know, one of the things I found very interesting is I read a book by George Adamski, and you can Google him online. He was a gentleman that lived around the middle part of the, you know, the 20th century.
Okay.
And he made contact with some beings from Venus and other areas or other planets and stuff. But one of the things that they said was they're very, very concerned about our planet because our planet is actually a part of the solar system. And we're holding them back. And if we destroy ourselves, it would cause harm to all the other planets in our soul. It doesn't just affect us.
Right.
It affects everything.
Everything.
And so it's actually, they were saying that it's causing radiation to come out of our planet out into the solar system even. And
okay.
So everything's connected, you know, and it goes, mm-hmm. you know, people talk about unity as a theory or as an idea, but in reality, no atom is separate from another atom. And so you're talking when it comes to radiation, you know, it affects everything. And if we destroy ourselves, it affects the solar system. You know, not only just are we punished and we have to go back to, as Mr. Krem, I think, often says, we would have to incarnate on, you know, Pluto, which he goes, you don't want to go to Pluto. It's not a very pleasant place to go to right now. I mean, eventually.
Wow.
Quite
yeah, that's an interesting metaphor because I really got dark and cold. That's
To kind of end on a happy note, though, each planet has seven incarnations. They're called rounds. And Pluto, for instance, is in the middle of its second round. We're in the middle of our fourth.
Okay.
Now, Venus is at the end, toward the end of their seventh round, so they're almost completely finished. But he said when a planet actually is in the middle of the fourth round is when it kind of finds its way, and that's when, you know, kind of, you know, starts moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And so we're at the point where, you know, we're moving along fine. Everything's, you know, as Maitreya says, he goes, I know your answer, and your answer makes me very glad, you know. And so it, all these problems are problems that should be addressed and focused on and talked about and debated and worked at eventually. But at the same time, you know, there is hope. There is, you know, we as a planet will move on. And as the Master says many times, that humanity will eventually will go to the farthest ends of the galaxy together and explore the farthest ends of the galaxy together. And but we obviously we have to fix our little planet first before we are able to do that. Our planet's very sick, and it's on its last leg, and we need to restore it back to health. And that's what you're talking about with the water, and, you know, I'm talking about with the nuclear radiation and everything like that, and it's vital, you know, obviously. So, but we have help, we have guidance, and like he says, you know, Maitreya will take, there's a lot of people doing a lot of great work in the world, but we're working kind of separately. You know, we're, you know, we have this group working toward this, and this one working for this.
Right.
And Maitreya's energy will galvanize and inspire all these groups into one direction, which first is going to be solving the problem of hunger. Once that's tackled, then it's going to be the environment will be the number one issue.
Right.
And he'll galvanize all these groups to solve the big problems first. Because once you solve the big problems, the other ones will just kind of whoop. And people will go,
well, they'll somewhat take care of themselves, because the problem is a symptom of us feeling being separate. I mean, exactly.
Absolutely. And as he said himself, he goes, as Ben even says in almost every one of his interviews, that Maitreya says, the crime of separation must be driven from this earth. He goes, I affirm that as my purpose, and that's Maitreya's purpose, and that should be everybody's purpose, really.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, and it's actually, it's because then it just aligns you with what's happening. This is what the consciousness purpose is. You know what I'm saying? It's happening from within us, which is the best part. So, you know, you don't, it's not about education. It's not about finances. It doesn't matter if you have a job or not. Just finding the peace within yourself and the hope, which is, I mean, you know, part of the messengers. I believe me and you and Ben, you know, we're the messengers, because for whatever the reason, we've had personal experiences. It's the only thing that's really different, from my perspective, that made me different, so to speak, to speak about this, is I've experienced, you know, galactics head on, you know, face to face. I've had exploding, you know, lights happen in my bedroom. I've, you know, things that I've had miracles, you know, all of that. But the potential for everybody is to experience all of that as well. I mean, it's, and not only is it the potential, it's not going to come from our brains. It's going to come from an essence within us that is, in my personal opinion, unstoppable. You can't stop this essence. I mean, you could potentially not experience it in body, but you can't stop the essence. The essence is evolving, and we're going along for the ride. So, you know, because my last thing that I've been saying lately on the show is, I'm the poster child for the shadow side, because it's a part of what wants to evolve. It's not just the light in us that wants to evolve. The dark in us needs love, needs compassion. It's a part of us. It has played a part in where we need it to be, and it wants to move on into evolution as much as the light does. And if you shun it, it's like it's still that separate mentality. It's you can't shun your own beingness. You can only embrace it, and then you pop into an alchemy that is just transformational. All right, we do have to end the show because we're 10 minutes over, but Gary, you're exquisite. I'm calling you again. But,
please, you can call, you can email me anytime. I would love to be on your show anytime.
Okay, because you have a lot to say. Your energy is beautiful, and you don't mind when I interrupt you. I mean, oh, how could I not invite you? I love you, sweet man. Thank you so much
you
for being
so
here
really
tonight.
Great.
You're exquisite.
Have a great night.
Thank you so much. Everybody, I will talk to you next week. Have an amazing week. Bye now.
Thank you.